From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Thursday was a good day for the First Amendment when the case of the Inauguration Day protesters resulted in the acquittal of all six defendants. 38-year-old Jennifer Armento, 26-year-old Michelle Macchio, 28-year-old Oliver Harris, 27-year-old Brittany Lawson, 20-year-old Christina Simmons, and 27-year-old Alexi Wood were all found not guilty of a number of charges that included rioting, property destruction, and conspiracy. They had faced decades in prison. The trial bodes well for more than 100 other activists who were arrested last January in Washington, D.C. during mass protests on the day that Donald Trump was inaugurated as president. With more protests planned in the coming year, the right to dissent faces a number of obstacles. My guest is Scott Michaelman, senior staff attorney with the ACLU of the District of Columbia. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
So these six people who were acquitted, can you explain the case that had been brought against them?
Sure. So with respect to most of the people that the prosecution is going after for their demonstration activities on January 20th, the prosecution does not have evidence. Certainly, they did not have evidence with respect to these six people of individual wrongdoing. So we know, we've all seen videos that folks broke windows and there were various acts of vandalism that day. But the government, instead of trying to figure out precisely who did what, has on the day the police rounded up whoever was around, whoever they could get their hands on. And then the prosecution has gone ahead and charged everyone who was arrested, regardless of any individual conduct that they might have engaged in. Now, the prosecution's theory here is conspiracy, that everyone who was arrested was engaged in a massive conspiracy to riot and destroy property. In fact, the jury rejected that view and found that these people were not guilty of these conspiracy-related charges. They were just there exercising their First Amendment-protected right to express their views about the inauguration of Donald Trump.
So essentially, when you, the prosecution is the government in this case, right?
That's right. So the U.S. Attorney's Office has taken a very aggressive stance and very quickly after Inauguration Day came out with charges against more than 200 people. Again, we don't know how many of them they have actual evidence against, but they admitted at the beginning of the trial of these first six individuals that they did not have evidence of individual acts of vandalism on the part of these individuals. Instead, they went with this guilt by association theory and were very glad that the jury rejected it.
In fact, I understand that as part of the evidence that the prosecution, the government presented in this case was video by this very shady and discredited right-wing organization calling itself Project Veritas. This is the group that is led by James O'Keefe, famous for the Planned Parenthood videos, right?
That's right. The government relied on a number of pieces of evidence, a lot of video evidence in this case. So the jury was really able to see, in a lot of cases, who was doing what, and more importantly, who wasn't doing what. But right, the government relied on this Project Veritas video. They also relied on officers who may become defendants in our civil suit against the police, and the defense attorneys were quite right to cross-examine those officers about the fact that if they portrayed the protesters' actions as worse, they could themselves, that is the police, be doing themselves a favor in the civil case, escaping liability for unconstitutional arrest, excessive force, and so on. So the police had a motive to hype up the demonstrators' participation, their unlawful activities, and still they could not get a conviction against any of these first six defendants.
And in fact, on Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2017, there was certainly some violence from the part of what we can assume are anti-inauguration activists. But there was also what seemed to be very aggressive policing by police, right?
That's right. The police conduct on that day was out of control. There were a number of cases in which officers pepper sprayed individuals who are not resisting, who are not posing a threat to public safety, just because the cops wanted to teach them a lesson, send a message, as they put it in their testimony, disrupt them, but without facing a particular threat. It was an unlawful use of force. And we've seen videos of some of these uses where cops are using these giant canisters of pepper spray, which we understand the police themselves call super soakers, to spray at protesters. And then of course, as the protesters were packed into a small area during the mass arrest, they're all subjected to this this cloud, this haze of chemical irritant that gets inside their lungs and their eyes. People's eyes are burning, they're choking, they're coughing, all packed together in a tight space. So it's very, very scary, very unpleasant. And the cops really went way too far, even after demonstrators were not resisting, were not disobeying orders.
So tell us a little bit about this group of six that whose acquittal represents a victory for dissent. Were they folks that were in a group together? What made them, what was the reason that they were tried together?
You know, the government had originally had a plan to try, I think, what they viewed as the worst offenders first, and that didn't work out, which may have been a benefit. It may be good that the jury got their first look at a group of six people who were just there, and they understand the bulk of the government's case, we do believe, is against people who were just there. So, for instance, you had someone there who was a medic, who was clearly identified as a medic and was there with essentially first aid supplies in case anyone got hurt at the demonstrations. You had someone there who was a journalist who was covering the demonstrations. And so these people were not there together. They were from all over the country. And the jury saw that what the government was trying to do here is use guilt by association to prosecute these people on the basis of acts of vandalism that they themselves did not commit, but that they were nearby. And in the government's view, that was enough. Now, in the Constitution's view, of course, that is not enough. We don't have guilt by association in this country. And further, these prosecutions and indeed the arrests and the conduct of the police generally sends a chilling message under the First Amendment to would-be protesters. Don't you come here to the nation's capital. Don't you protest. You'll be at risk that if something goes wrong, if someone breaks a window, you'll be subjected to arrest and pepper spray and a prosecution that will turn your life upside down for a year. And so this is an important step. What happened Thursday is an important step in sending a message to both prosecutors and to police that they need to be restrained, they need to respect demonstrators' rights, and they need to not charge people on the basis of being nearby when an act of vandalism occurs, but instead recognize that people have the right to demonstrate, even if other people are committing unlawful acts.
Will this case, will the results of this case deter the government from pursuing charges against the 100 plus other activists who still face these felony charges, and many of them, which could mean decades in prison? Or do you think that the government might back off?
It's hard to know. We certainly hope they will back off at this time, having demonstrated or having learned, we think, from Thursday's verdict that this guilt by association approach will not fly with a jury. We hope they will lift the cloud of prosecution that hangs over all of these peaceful protesters who are facing, as you say, decades in prison. The charges that have been stacked up against them carry more than 60 years in prison. Their lives have been turned upside down. They've put wedding plans and plans to move across the country on hold. They've had their careers disrupted. They've had to return again and again to Washington, D.C., many of them not from here, to be at hearings for this trial. They had to sit through a month-long trial, all the while paying expenses, paying their lawyers, and under this cloud of anxiety that they face these massive charges. That's really not a fair and not a right thing of the prosecutors to be doing for all these people whose only crime was that they wanted to raise their voices and express their disapproval of the inauguration of Donald Trump. That sends a chilling message, and the First Amendment needs to be respected and protected, not chilled.
It's amazing how people who in government who say that they are respectful of the Constitution then show very little respect for things like the First Amendment or use the idea of the First Amendment in perverse ways. We've seen over this past year so much attention being paid to the rights of conservative, right-wing, and straight-up overtly racist white supremacists to speak on college campuses. And here you have the very clear-cut case of the right of people to express their dissent on the streets of their capital and being targeted by the government. Is what you've seen, essentially, this is what the very first year of the Trump administration is this that you've seen different from the way in which dissent has been criminalized under previous presidents? Or is this essentially is the U.S. government being the U.S. government?
Well, we've certainly seen the D.C. police on other occasions have problems restraining themselves. They've used excessive force. They arrested people when they shouldn't have arrested people. So this isn't the first go-round for the D.C. police on this front. But speaking more broadly, it has been a very dangerous year for the First Amendment when you have a president who clearly doesn't understand the First Amendment, who thinks he can threaten and shut down newspapers, who thinks he can sue anyone who disagrees with him or who criticizes him. And now these prosecutions, which are by the U.S. government, send a very chilling message. And I think you're right. There is an irony here that that folks don't recognize that the First Amendment really goes both ways. And it's very important for all sides of all debates to recognize that the same First Amendment that protects your message protects everyone else's messages as well. And so we need to recognize that any chipping away of First Amendment freedoms, whether it's through direct restraints, through police action, through chilling prosecutions, will end up having an effect on all of our abilities to speak our minds and speak out for what we believe in.
What does this action by the government do to the ability of the people who've been arrested and charged to express their dissent? I mean, over 200 people facing the situation, six of whom now can maybe get back to their lives. But have those people been able to express their dissent over this past year, or has this action really quelled their ability to speak out?
It really has had a chilling effect. And I've definitely heard from folks who have said, we don't go to protests that we used to go to.
Wow.
Maybe go to protest, but try to take a less prominent role. Try not to be as visible. Try not to be around where police are, or other sort of self-protective measures in the wake of these arrests and pepper sprayings and prosecutions. They have made people warier of speaking their mind, and that's a dangerous thing for a democracy that thrives on the free exchange of ideas and using the power of words and ideas to convince each other. Rather than relying on violence or suppression or authoritarian tactics. So it's very important that free speech be in this country. And when we see the arrest and prosecution of people who are doing nothing more than exercising their First Amendment rights, that's a very dangerous thing, and we should all fight back against it.
There were several marches this past year. Did people who participated in those also find themselves in a similar situation? And also, we've got marches coming up next year.
Well, there have been marches all over the country where we've been hearing stories of a lack of restraint on the part of law enforcement. Marches for all different types of causes. And it's a time, particularly in this climate, where you have the president and his allies degrading the First Amendment and bills being introduced all over the country in state legislatures to make it harder to protest. Or even in one bill that I was reading about, there was a legislature that tried to remove penalties for motorists who ran into protesters, so making it more dangerous physically to protest. You have a climate in which folks think that the way to wage political warfare is to suppress dissent and suppress ideas they don't agree with. And that's not how our country works. That's not how the First Amendment works. And that's not how our democracy will stay healthy and really be able to engage at a level of ideas rather than brute political power.
Any legal advice for people who are planning to head to Washington, D.C. for the future marches? There's going to be another women's march. There will be, I'm sure, other marches as well. Of course, in D.C., there always are marches in D.C.
Well, the best advice I can give is just that that the First Amendment depends on people's willingness to speak out, and you should continue to speak your mind. I believe that we may be at the beginning of a turning point here with this verdict and with our civil lawsuit going forward. I'm hopeful that we'll see the chilling effect recede. So I hope people will continue to protest and will continue to speak out, and that the authorities may be learning a lesson about the limits of their power to criminalize dissent.
And finally, Scott, tell us a little bit about the civil lawsuit that you just mentioned.
So in the civil lawsuit, we have claims on behalf of four individuals, one photojournalist, one legal observer, and two individuals who were there to express their views about the inauguration. They were in various groups. They have claims for either false arrest and unconstitutional arrest without probable cause, for excessive force, for pepper spraying, for being held in unlawful conditions of confinement, held for hours without food, water, or bathrooms. And we're trying to send a message to the DC police that they need to be respectful of demonstrators' First Amendment rights and take the time to make the differentiation between people who are actually themselves breaking the law and people who are just nearby and expressing a similar message. It's not unlawful to be near a protest or in a protest where someone does something unlawful. If that were true, we really would have guilt by association, and going to protest would be a dangerous thing. We're trying to prevent that from happening by holding the police accountable for their over-arresting, for their excessive force, and other unconstitutional actions on that day. We submitted an amicus brief to the court about the implications of the First Amendment, and we've been working closely with defense counsel, making sure defense counsel are ready to consider the First Amendment implications of what the prosecutor is doing in this case.
Got it. Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
My guest is Scott Michaelman, senior staff attorney with the ACLU of the District of Columbia. We've been discussing the acquittal of six Inauguration Day protesters in Washington, D.C. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.